Our Voices Project acknowledges and honors that the lands we live, love, grow, work, and learn on are the ancestral homelands of the people of the Onondaga, or the Seneca, one of the six nations of the Haudenosaunee Confederacy, along with the Cayuga, who call themselves the Gayukono, the Onondaga, who call themselves the Onondaga, the Oneida, who call themselves Oneutica, the Mohawk, who call themselves Genegahaga, and the Tuscarora, who call themselves Garure. We acknowledge that our society was founded upon exclusions and erasures of many Indigenous peoples through centuries of genocide and forced separation from family, culture, language, and from land, spirit, and mind. We acknowledge this violent history of seizure and displacement that allows us to be on this land not only as a recognition, but as a motivation for change. As filmmakers, we are committed to working to dismantle the ongoing legacies of settler colonialism through truth-telling. We invite you to join us in enacting justice by taking such steps as committing to making a recurring monthly donation to a Native-led organization, such as to Ganondagon State Historic Site in Victor, New York, and or Native Made in Rochester, New York. Visit these organizations and find out how you can volunteer your time and help support Native-led initiatives. Find out how Indigenous peoples are represented in your local school district's curricula and advocate for the historical truth-telling of ancestral land dispossession and genocide and the acknowledgement and celebration of Indigenous contributions, past and present. Learn about the Murdered and Missing Indigenous Women movement, created to advocate for the end of violence against Native women and to bring awareness to the high rates of disappearances and murders of Native people, particularly women and girls. Learn how you can help. Help work towards truth, healing, and justice for the Indian boarding school impacts by contributing to the National Native American Boarding School Healing Coalition.
Hey listeners, is your morning cup of coffee tasting a little less flavorful than you expected? The secret to a great cup is starting with fresh beans, and at Joe Bean Roasters, they roast and ship daily, so you get super fresh coffee every single time. If you want to level up your morning routine, check out their new Guide to Brewing Better Coffee at Home, which covers everything from grind size to water quality. You can get cheap shipping straight to your door or choose convenient local pickup at Joe Bean or at Peppermint. Head to JoeBeanRoasters.com and use the promo code LUNCHADOR10 at checkout for 10% off your order. Thanks to Joe Bean for sponsoring the Lunchador Podcast Network.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Representation in Cinema. Our Voices Project is a production company committed to providing a safe space and platform for Black, Brown, and Indigenous peoples to share experiences while dismantling destructive stereotypes perpetuated in the media through visual storytelling and truth-telling. On this podcast, we talk about the many ways in which Black, Brown, and Indigenous peoples are portrayed in films. We address the things that we love seeing, the tropes and stereotypes that Hollywood continues to perpetuate on screen, and what representation we'd like to see moving forward.
And happy Arab American Heritage Month. I'm your host, Jackie McGriff. And if this is your first time listening and or watching, welcome to Representation in Cinema. We talk about the films that center Black, Brown, and Indigenous voices, as well as on the film industry itself. I'm not only your host, but also the founder, director, and co-producer of Our Voices Project, a production company that shares the stories and lived experiences of Black, Brown, and Indigenous peoples through visual storytelling and truth-telling. We're community-engaged filmmakers who firmly believe that you cannot center these communities without also being in community and in solidarity with them. If you're watching this on YouTube, make sure y'all hit that subscribe button and also the little bell to get notified about when new episodes drop. If you're listening on your preferred podcast platform, hit that follow button. If you like today's episode, please rate us 5 stars and leave a comment letting us know all the things that you enjoyed about this episode. Tonight starts a new series highlighting the representation and misrepresentation of Arabs in Western cinema, more specifically the U.S. We're going to be breaking down the film Real Bad Arabs, talking about the destructive stereotypes that writer and lecturer, the late Jack Shaheen, talks about both in the film and in the book of the same title, and about what authentic representation actually looks like. For so long, our government has fed us these stereotypes repeatedly in movies manufacturing consent to commit global atrocities. So we're going to be diving into what to look for and how to advocate for the kind of representation that paints Arabs as the multifaceted, complex human beings that they are. Before we get into all of that, I'm joined by Amira Ferjani, who's going to be devoting this episode to defining the Swana region, identifying anti-Swana and anti-Arab discrimination, and differentiating between those terms and others we want to keep in mind moving forward throughout this series. Amira, do you want to tell the people all about yourself?
Yes. Hi, everyone. I'm Amira. You can find me as Amira Out Loud on most platforms. I work in marketing and communications. I have a keen eye for detail and creative problem solving, and I use that experience as well as my experience as a Tunisian American to bring my unique perspective, specifically around educating about the Southwest Asian and North African region and the discrimination that we face as peoples from that region, as well as the often erased diversity of that region, which is what we see in a lot of American cinema, where we're flattened into either all being Arab, all being Muslim, all being this vague, omnipresent threat, basically, to America. So I'm really excited to join this podcast and dive into that and dive into why it's so important to have these conversations, because unfortunately, they're not really being had.
Yeah. Thank you so much for joining us and for being my co-host, co-pilot, co-conspirator. Well, actually, I'm more the co-conspirator here because it's Arab American. So I'm the co-conspirator here. So
I've dragged you into our plan.
Oh my gosh. You know what? And I'm here for it. By the way, for our listeners and our viewers for the rest of the series, if you haven't already seen Real Bad Arabs, that's R-E-E-L, Real Bad Arabs, we highly recommend that you watch. It is free 99 on YouTube right now. It's less than an hour. We highly recommend that you go and check that out. And with that, Amira, can you take us through the terms that our audience needs to know? Let's start with the term SWANA. I think you had already started to define it there. But do you want to explain, you know, that term as opposed to using a
Yes.
phrase like Middle East?
Yes, absolutely. Middle East is a term that we've all heard and that we're all most familiar with, and it's still a largely used term, but partly why we are changing to saying SWANA, which stands for Southwest Asian and North African, is because even the term Middle East, it has roots in colonial history. It implies Middle East of Europe, which is seen as the center of the world, and it's become synonymous with what very Eurocentric and Western projections onto the region. So like I said, it often entails a idea that we're all Muslim, that we're all Arab, and that we need to be represented in this way by people usually outside of the region. They are known as Orientalists, they're known as Arabists, but these are usually white men who are literally studying our region a lot of times simply for military and colonial interest in order to figure out how to manage and control our region. So simply changing our language to SWANA is the first step in not only educating people about this deep colonial history, which has basically plagued the entire West versus East interactions, and being able to take that language back and name it for ourselves to remind people of how diverse the region is. And I have a personal connection to it because as a North African, I've always taken issue with being called a Middle Eastern. I've always been like, I'm not from the Middle East, I'm from North Africa. So it's just one step, even for me personally, to be able to recognize how broad the region is. But when you think of Middle East, when you think of a Middle Easterner, a certain image does come to mind. And so it kind of starts to challenge that, to remind people of how diverse the region is and that we shouldn't let these very Oriental viewpoints define us.
So, and we'll get back to Orientalism, you know, momentarily yeah. here, but I also wanted to address, because a lot of times in what I've seen, at least online, as folks are in these conversations, if you can call them conversations online, because of course everything online is discourse. But be that as it may, from the conversations that I do see, you know, there is this, you know, there's constant, especially when we're talking about a Arab American Heritage Month, you know, and Arabs within the region as well as across the diaspora here in the U.S. You know, I think there's like also a conflation between. Or is there a conflation between SWANA, using the term SWANA versus using the term Arab? Or is SWANA sort of like this all-encompassing thing, especially when we're talking about, does it act like this umbrella that Arab just is underneath? Like, can you go yes. more into detail about that?
So I would say It absolutely does have Swana is supposed to be more of the umbrella term because, unfortunately, in addition to being called the Middle East, it's also been referred to as the Islamic world and the Arab world, which are both very reductive terms. I actually was just today having this conversation on Threads with someone who said Hassan Piker is Arab, and I had to tell them he's Turkish. That they actually don't consider themselves Arab, same as Iranians are. They mainly identify as Persian. There are other groups such as the Kurds. I'm personally Amazigh. I'm indigenous to North Africa. A lot of them also don't like being called Arab because a lot of these people went through what we call Arabization, where they were introduced to the culture, introduced to Islam, and it proliferated because of the Ottoman Empire into a lot of these cultures. But they're still very distinct ethnic groups. So being able to diet. Differentiate with Swana when we're referring to the whole region helps not flatten those groups into Arab or Islam. And yeah, I think that example from today was the perfect example of that. Hassan definitely faces a lot of the same racism that Arabs do because of the flattening of this region, just like a lot of Americans also think all Iranians are Arab. So starting with this bigger term, kind of stepping back from those very narrow viewpoints, helps us be more inclusive when we're talking about this region instead of kind of instantly bending the knee to these racist caricatures that have been put out.
So I've also heard, because you've mentioned, especially with like, again, Swana kind of being like this all-encompassing thing where not everyone who is from a region or from, somewhere from the Swana region, like they don't want to necessarily be defined, right, or categorized or what have you, labeled as Arab. So what would you say as far as, because of course, like countries are made up of all sorts of different people. So I don't want to say, or which countries are those, but like, I guess when we're talking about Arabs, which countries would you say would be, or I guess, I'm not sure how to actually ask this question because it's interesting, like the way in which you're talking about the Swana region. And so to label, to label people an Arab, or just because you're specifically from a country doesn't necessarily mean that you are Arab. So I guess when we're thinking about Arab, is there a way, or are there regions or are there countries that define themselves as Arab?
There definitely are. What I'd like to first say is that a big part of my work and the purpose of all this is to ask that person, what they feel that they identify with, because that is where I have really, on my personal journey, I used to exclusively talk about anti-Arab discrimination because that's just what I felt fit best. And I would, of course, also include anti-Muslim discrimination, but it was in my conversations in advocating for that I would have people come to me and say, "Hey, you were talking about Palestine, but not all Palestinians identify as Arab. Some of them consider themselves Levantine. Even my fellow North Africans, a lot of them, like I said, don't like being called Arab because they feel they were Arabized. They prefer calling themselves Amazigh or Berber or the multitudes of North African indigenous groups that there are." And so a big part of that is listening to the people and hearing what they identify with, how they define their cultures. But there are absolutely, like the United Arab Emirates, that consider themselves very Arab. And Arabic also being a language, there are a lot of these countries, such as Palestine, that speak predominantly Arabic. And so a lot of those people do consider themselves Arab, but it's not something that I would say from within these countries is fully agreed upon. It's definitely an outsider label from a lot of times countries that don't always understand the diversity. So I would say listening to that person and what they identify as, I think because Arab is also so conflated with Islam, that's a big reason for it, where there are Druze people and Christians and Maronites throughout Lebanon, Syria, and all of this that I think tend to distance themselves from the Arab label for that reason as well, because they don't want to instantly be assumed as Muslim. I mean, I know that was a large part of why I would specifically talk about Arab and make that distinction because I'm not Muslim either. And so that becomes like an assumption. As soon as you say, like, I'm from an Arabic speaking country, people would start posing me questions about Islam and stuff. And so it was always something that I distance myself from because of that. So I can see why a lot of people also have as well. So wrap that all up. I would say ask the person that you're speaking about, but to be safe, that's why saying SWANA is just so much easier. Or of course, if you're referring to a specific country, just refer to that specific country.
Right. Okay. Yeah. Good to know. Thank you so much for that. There's always, I mean, especially with, you know, us as Americans, and especially like the many negative lights that those regions have been put into for so long, not just through movies, which is of course what we'll be getting into later on in our series, but also in our news media. The things that we get as Americans are definitely not the things that other countries are getting, just as far as like what's going on in that region, which is why so many of us, and especially during, you know, the Palestinian genocide right now, we turned to independent journalists, you know, on the ground, who were experiencing, right? I mean, who are experiencing things that are happening on the ground.
And I think in American media, especially, there's a big erasure of that history. I mean, this is the oldest part of the world, really, especially places like Palestine that have almost every religion has a claim to it, has history there. And so when we're flattening all this into just Arabs or the Ottoman Empire or whatever it is that we're referencing, we are forgetting how evolved and how diverse it is. You know, it's similar to how Asia is a broad umbrella term, but Japanese people are separate from Chinese people because these are just such cultures with such a deep history that they've like Tunisian Arabic, completely different from Palestinian Arabic. And most people wouldn't know that. I just learned that Tunisian Arabic is actually closer to Maltese than other forms of modern Arabic because of how old Tunisia is, because of the cultures that grew up there. So,
oh my God. You know, I'm learning so many things today. And so many other things as well. Mm-hmm. No, thank you for that. Okay. So before you had mentioned about Orientalism, and you've So you've been referencing that book. Can you, so just for, again, for our audience and everything, yeah, explain the premise of the book and maybe also getting into like the points, especially when we're, again, we're pointing to anti-SWANA discrimination, you know, and you know what Edward Said talks about, right? Like with Orientalism and, you know, its destructive like ideology. So yeah, if you want to get into some of the takeaways that you've had from reading that.
Yeah. And I literally keep it on my desk because like I reference it so much. But Edward Said is a Palestinian American. He lived in exile after his family was removed from Palestine, from the Nakba. And so his perspective is really key, but he kind of was the grandfather of this idea of finally giving us a voice against Orientalists, which are people who, in addition to Middle East, what they actually used to call the Middle East was the Orient. And the people there were known as Orientals. And so it became a caricature and something that I think is especially relevant to today's conversation talking about Hollywood representation is that he would say the Orient is the stage on which the whole East is confined. And so it became this way for Europeans, imperialists, colonialists to represent a vast millions of people populated land to Westerners to help them understand. And like I was saying earlier, really that understanding was to help them figure out how to colonize us, how to manage us, how to put us into a box that not only justified the colonization because we were often represented as backwards, as uncivilized, as savage, as barbaric, but also how then to take advantage of that. And so things like Zionism are born from Orientalism, are born from these colonialist ideals because they, you know, like they say, oh, they're the only democracy in the Middle East. And so they use that as justification for occupation, as justification for the billions of dollars that get poured into them for defense, because apparently they're supposed to be the last line of civilized defense against this like I was just saying, centuries old region that is really born of civilization in many ways. I mean, you can thank Arabic numerals for our entire math system, but instead it's been erased, and our impact has been erased. Our culture has been reduced to Islam. Like, there are so many names I can list off that Orientalists would call us. Like, instead of saying Muslim, they would call you a Muhammad man because they have so many ideas about the Prophet Muhammad. Yeah. And so there's really, it's a very reductionist worldview of the Orient, but understood as from a Western point of view, not something that we got to represent ourselves in. And that's something that Edward Said also talks a lot about, especially with Palestine, something he calls the permission to narrate, because Palestinians at all of these peace deals, they never get to represent themselves. It's Egypt and America and Israel, the UAE, that are for some reason at the table. I mean, even with, like, is it called the New Gaza, the Jared Kushner plan?
God,
I don't think a single Palestinian was part of that. In fact, I recently heard they did have a Muslim woman on the board. I don't know how she got there, but she left already. So, like, it's this idea that we simply are not the narrators right now in the Western world of our own story. And so, if you look up Edward Said, you will find a lot of white Orientalists very mad about it, trying to discuss how, no, they love the Arab culture, and that's why they reduce us all to something that they can, you know, write a book about. It's something called, especially with, like, missionaries and stuff and travelers, those were kind of the first Orientalists, because they would go, like, Lane, he has this book on Egypt where he goes and just writes all of these hallucinations, projections on the world, on people that, you know, he doesn't speak the language of, that he can't communicate with, and he just kind of makes up these stories for them. And a lot of these, Lane was very foundational into what Napoleon thought, and why Napoleon thought he could just waltz into this world of people, you know, wearing towels on their heads and who don't understand civilization, and, like, wow us and just take over. And, you know, Napoleon didn't fare too well in that endeavor. So I think it just really shows how a lot of the experts, so-called experts, aren't really experts within these cultures. And that's what we see now today in the U.S. And what I've kind of localized into anti-Swana racism is that we have all these Middle East experts. Every time I'm watching the nightly news, it's some white man, usually ex-military, telling us about how Iran is going to respond, how Palestine, how Lebanon is going to respond, instead of actually talking to people from these regions. And then the way the media does frame talking to people from these regions, I remember watching them interview an Iranian official, and NBC asked him, why are you attacking other Muslim countries during Ramadan? And it was, but no question to Israel and the U.S.
Of course not.
You know, who are also attacking Muslim countries during Ramadan. Iran is a Muslim country, you know?
Yeah. Oh,
so that's, Orientalism is something that is, and so that book was originally written in 1967, and he really, anything that I could say, Edward Said has said first, and rest in peace, he passed away in 2003, so he's not here to see the destruction that is happening today, but I know he would just be saying, I told you so, and continuing his work, so.
For real. Oh my gosh. But it's interesting, just, and of course, like, there's always an elder, like, you know, you can look to like talk about all these things, you know. It's very interesting. A few things I'll say, because I'm gonna keep saying it's interesting, just because, like, as I'm, like, hearing you talk through all of these things, there's several things that are coming up. One is, of course, like, you know, to paint an entire region of people as, like, one thing, of course, is, like, by design. See that, right? With, I mean, I can only speak to my personal experience, you know, as a Black person living in America, like, to paint us with this broad brush so that it's easier to dehumanize us, and it's easier to, right, to commit atrocity after atrocity. And so when I'm hearing you, like, say that, it's just like, I mean, although I cannot understand like every, although I haven't been through like every experience that's unique to someone from that region, I can understand as a Black person living in America, right, to have, to know what it's like to be dehumanized and to have seen that throughout our history as well. So, oh gosh, like number one, I just want to say this is like, there needs to be more conversation because clearly the way in which our government works, right, we're seeing, well, now we're seeing like the dismantling of the Department of Education, but even before then, like this was not, like these are not things that are brought up, you know, in our global history, right? At least for me, and I don't know what it was like for you, but we were taught, as far as global history goes, it was Western Europe, specifically Western Europe, like nothing about Eastern Europe. Okay, there might have been, you know, Russia, that they maybe they covered Russia. They would talk about like
China, the Soviet Union, basically.
Yeah, the Soviet Union, and then like, was it like, yeah, Japan and China, and that was pretty much it. Mm-hmm. Nothing,
and then Africa as a whole, as just one.
Africa as a whole. No, Africa's country. Like, what are we? Okay. So nothing about that. Any sort of depiction that we got of folks from the Swana region was always impoverished. This is not to say that, you know, there aren't regions where that is very much the case, but at the same time, it's like you're only showing like one small piece. It's every time you're depicting people, it's that they are impoverished, that they're less intelligent, when we're finding out every single day. And of course, like we're finding out every single day, especially when we're talking about what's going on in Iran, these are a highly intelligent people. Like the education, right, that they get is insane. For us to be talking about anybody's IQ when you look at or anybody's education, when you look at, you know, other regions and the amount of education that they're getting. Like, so anyway, to go back to, you know, what I was saying again on how it's easier to like dehumanize the people, but also the importance of talking to folks from that region, talking about their experiences, learning the history from people from those regions, right? Asking them how they identify. I think that's all very important because, of course, our schools are not going to do it. Our news media is not going to do it. Our movies, right? As far as the ones that are more mainstream, those are not going to do it. I mean, we're seeing so much, you know, as far as like, you know, the efforts to decolonize the lens, if you will, especially with companies like Watermelon Pictures, also the Arab the Film Institute, you know, who will highlight films that are very much painting the narrative that is, you know, the experiences of those people in a multifaceted light, right? Experiences of a people, and many people with many different backgrounds and cultures and, you know, all the in ideologies and faith systems and everything. I think it's more important now more than ever to, like, again, continue to have these conversations, but then also making sure that we are having, not only having conversations, but also making sure that we have and refer to, you know, elders before us, elders who are still here, people who are experts, not only in just their lived experiences, but then also in the history and the culture, you know, the history of colonization. Because I'm even hearing you talk about, you know, how folks, especially in North Africa, many of them don't want to identify or don't identify as being Arab because of the colonization that's happened even there, or being Arabized. Is all very interesting. And this is a massive region that we're talking about. And we haven't really been shown or taught a lot. So yeah, all of this.
I'd like to touch on when you're talking about Black people, especially, part of another reason I say Swana is because people have this separation between Black people and Arab people or Swana people. And there are Black Palestinians, Black Swana people throughout the region. And I especially use Swana in the sense that also includes Somalia and Sudan, because while they have a very unique experience being predominantly Black, we see, like with people like Rep. Ilhan Omar, a lot of the same rhetoric being used against Rep. Rashida Tlaib, who is a Palestinian American, being used against Rep. Ilhan Omar for being a hijabi wearing Black woman. And we're seeing that hateful rhetoric get spun into violence. Like you said, with the dehumanization, a lot of Black liberation fighters have been called terrorists in the same vein that Arab freedom fighters are called. So while we have unique experiences, like with how, you know, ICE may be more wielded against Swana people because we're seen as foreign, there's still a lot of overlap because Somali people go through some of the same stuff.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Is there anything else that you, as far as like takeaways go, from Edward Said's book that, you know, you really want our audience to know? And especially like, I'm going to be putting you know, the title and the author's name, of course, in the show notes, but, you know, for people to go and check out. But is there any other takeaways that you would, you know, like to address?
Yeah, I'll just read a quote because he says it so much more succinctly than I do. But especially for this conversation that we're having, one quote that I really like by him is, "One aspect of the electronic postmodern world is that there has been a reinforcement of stereotypes by which the Orient is viewed. Television, the films, and all the media's resources have forced information into more and more standardized molds. The Arab is always shown in large numbers, no individuality, no personal characteristics. Most of the pictures represent mass rage and misery or irrational, hence hopelessly eccentric gestures. Lurking behind all these images is the menace of jihad. Consequence, a fear that the Muslim or Arabs will take over the world." And yeah, I'm sure as we get into especially real bad Arabs, Jack Shaheen shows example after example of that threat that we've been reduced to, whether they're Iranian or Palestinian. It's really flattened us into just kind of this thing to fear instead of humans that are trying their best. And especially what you were talking about with how we're always shown as impoverished and oppressed. It's what I wanted to say is that, like, what's always missing is how we got there. Yes. The rubble in Gaza was buildings, was skyscrapers, was people's homes, was architecture that was thousands of years old, especially with like the Dome of the Rock and some of the very historical sites there. Yet we're only seeing the aftermath. And if there ever is blame placed, which usually there's not, for some reason it's always just this, like, this is how these people live apparently, with their homes blown to bits, it's usually put on Hamas or put on our terroristic tendencies instead of on the colonialist, which, you know, spoiler alert, that's who it is.
Oh gosh, yeah, we're going to be getting, of course, into all of that within these next few episodes as a part of this series. Definitely wanted to get into this just because having seen Real Bad Arabs again, which is free 99, free, okay, free on YouTube right now. It's less than an hour, but like, there was so much, and of course we're going to be getting to this, but there was so much in there that I think, like, in the back of your head, like, you're not surprised, right? But it's just, it's kind of like
something you haven't seen before. Yeah. Like, it's just so normalized. It's just right. Background noise until you're like, wait, yeah, why is it always someone dressed like that in a keffiyeh yelling usually gibberish Arabic, because you're usually not even an Arab person and they can't even speak Arabic. Why is that happening?
Right. Exactly. And there's, yeah, there is so much to cover within these next upcoming episodes that I am very interested in getting to talk to you and other folks with these lived experiences. I'm so excited to be talking about all of that. Before we wrap up, Amira, where can folks find you and how can they support you?
Yes, I'm on Substack, Amira Out Loud. I have a lot of this kind of foundational conversations that we've been having about like why I say SWANA, why I think it's more important to use inclusive language. That was my most recent blog post, and also discussing anti-SWANA racism, always referencing Edward Said all over my Substack. I'm most active on Threads, which is Amira Out Loud 2026, but just search Amira Out Loud on your preferred social media. You'll probably find me. And yeah, thank you so much. I'm so excited to see the rest of this series as well.
Yes, absolutely. I'll be putting together a list of, first of all, y'all, Amira got, she has so many references for us. When we're going through the notes, I'm like, I've got homework to do, which is totally fine because, of course, we're, at Our Voices Project, we're all about, you know, education, especially when we're talking about films and looking at films critically, especially with a decolonized lens. So I will be putting links to quite a few of those sources, as well as, of course, where you can find Amira and support her and read up on so many of the things that she's consistently talking about, especially when it comes to anti-SWANA discrimination. And with that, I'd like to thank you, Amira, for joining us tonight. I'm, like you said, I am also so excited to have you on for the rest of the series to talk about all of this and more. Listeners, like I said, we'll have information about where you can follow and support her in our show notes or in the description below, of course, if you're watching on YouTube. Wherever you're listening from, hit that subscribe button. And if you liked tonight's episode, please give us a 5-star rating. Share this episode and leave a comment to let us know what you liked the most about tonight's episode. Follow us on Facebook, Instagram, TikTok, Threads, all the things. You can also visit us at ourvoicesproject.com and sign up for our newsletter to learn more about what we do. In our next episodes, we're going to be breaking down the misrepresentation of Arabs in Hollywood, Hollywood's ties to the U.S. government, navigating the films industry as an Arab actor, and what authentic representation actually looks like. Until then, we highly recommend, and I can't say it enough, to go and watch Real, that's R-E-E-L, Bad Arabs, now available for free. This education is for free, y'all, okay? On YouTube. This has been Jackie McGriff, your host for this episode of Representation in Cinema. As always, thank you for listening.